First of all, could you provide me with some background information on how the new record came to shape, The Cold, in terms of the songwriting process and getting songs together and then eventually going into the studio to record them?
What country am I calling? I'm just curious.
Wales.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's cool. I haven't done an interview with Wales before. Okay, well, sure. I mean, basically, we were on Crash Music for Dreams of Death, okay? So Crash Music became part of Driven Music, but it took a little bit of time. So it gave us more time to write. So we spent a lot more time, actually, on the writing process, and then the songwriter on the record, Mark Simpson, he bought a lot of upgraded gear for his home studio so that he could make, you know, more professional demos for the songs. So we had better gear to work out ideas. We had more time to work out the ideas. I spent more time with Mark working out the ideas. We just were more careful that end of the process. We rehearsed a lot more, you know, for the song. So, you know, we were committed to making this record very good, and then we're very confident that the engineer/producer that we were going to use, that he knew how to get good metal tones, because we were very disappointed with the mix on the previous record, and we were going to make sure to not make that mistake again. So we got a real metal engineer who had a lot of experience with Megadeth, and in fact he remixed Megadeth's whole catalog with Dave Mustaine, and he worked with Michael Schenker. So I mean, we had a great engineer. We recorded in a great room with, you know, vintage microphones and great guitars, and so it was just, you know, more professional all the way through from top to bottom, really.
So in terms of the playing then, and also the mix then, this is a superior record in every respect then, from the band's perspective.
Well, you know, you love every record that you do, obviously, or you wouldn't release it. You wouldn't have any integrity if you released records that you didn't feel were strong. But what ends up happening is, a lot of times, let's say you even get a good mix, then the mastering fuck it all up. You know, I mean, that's what happened with Unnatural Selection. We thought the mix was great in the studio. When we were sitting in the studio when the record was done and the mix was done, we thought it sounded great. And then they sent it to a mastering house who added more bass drum, and it didn't sound half as good when it was mastered as when it was mixed. So you have to stay on top of the whole process. But as far as the songwriting itself, you know, we felt good about every record we've ever done. And I went back and listened to Dreams of Death just a few days ago. I hadn't listened to it, actually, in a couple of years. And I think the songs on that record are really great. I really do. I just think that what was missing on that record was, the engineer wasn't really a metal engineer. And we had faith that he could figure it out, but in the end, he didn't, you know. So we made a mistake there, you know, and we learned from that mistake. You always learn from your mistakes, but when it comes to writing songs, we feel like, you know, we always put 100% into it. But when you have more time to write, obviously more time, it usually equals, you know, better outcome. You know, so we just, you know, we had more time and we had, you know, better home recording stuff to work out ideas. I mean, that I can't say enough how much that helped.
Yeah, you mentioned Unnatural Selection, which I believe was the first record you played on with Flotsam and Jetsam. Aside from the mastering, what are your thoughts on that record looking back?
You know, it was Mark Simpson and I were hired on the same day, and we thought we were just going on the High tour. High was the record before Unnatural Selection, and after the High record was released, that's when Kelly Smith and Michael Gilbert decided to leave the band. And so when I got the call, okay, I auditioned, and then I got the gig, and so did Mark. And we thought, ultimately, that Mike and Kelly were going to come back after the tour. The way it was kind of out there was, you know, that, you know, I think the band wanted to keep their options open because they didn't really know myself or Mark Simpson, and, you know, they knew that they had to do a tour, and we did a nice long tour. We did 8 weeks in the States with Nevermore, and we did 4 weeks in Europe with Anvil and Exciter, but Mark and I never really knew until about the middle of that tour that the band wanted to just stick with us. So, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of songwriting ideas going into that band because we didn't really think we were going to be the full-time band necessarily. So, you know, when we got back from that tour, it was pretty much rushed. We had an opportunity to go in the studio. Metal Blade wanted to get us in right away, and so we really didn't spend probably as much time as we should have in the writing. So in retrospect, I would say the record to me sounds like, you know, the songs are good, but they're not great. I mean, you know, we're not, you know, in retrospect, like I say, you know, when we did it, we were more excited about it, obviously, because it was Mark and I's first record, and you know, so we thought that the songs were fine, but, you know, the hindsight, as they say, is 20/20. When I look back, I can say that we didn't spend enough time in the writing, and then we got, you know, kind of burned in the mastering. So, I mean, you know, it's a live and learn experience, man. You know, we learned from that, and then we brought the lessons that we learned from that into My God. And so I think My God was a whole hell of a lot better than Unnatural Selection because, you know, we, like I said, we learned some lessons and we didn't repeat the mistake.
Do you feel the songwriting was superior then on that record?
On which one?
My God.
Well, I think this record has better songs than My God, but I sure think that My God songs were better than Unnatural Selections, and I think ultimately My God's probably a better record also than Dreams of Death. I mean, you know, when you have so many records, you can't say they're all equal, and you can't, you know, you have to say this one's probably better than this one's probably better than that one. It wouldn't be honest to say they're all great or, you know, they're all great. No, I mean, you know, I think My God was better than the other two, but I think this record clearly has better songs, in my opinion.
Okay. Obviously the band is signed to in America to Driven Music Group, which is headed up by Brian Welch, formerly of Korn. How did that deal come about?
Just, we didn't have anything to do with it. We didn't know him at all. It was Crash Music. The owner of Crash Music is a man named Mark Nawara. Mark Nawara had a relationship with them, with Brian, and with Brian's manager. His name is Greg. And Brian, Greg, and Mark formed Driven all together as an entity. So Mark suggested that Driven take on Flotsam as one of their first signings because he's a big fan of the band, and he, you know, he released Live in Japan, which, you know, didn't get released in all markets, but we did do a live DVD from Tokyo, and Mark released that first under Crash Music, and then offered us to go into the studio to do Dreams of Death, which we did, and then Crash folded and then was reopened as Driven. So that was all done between Mark and Brian. We didn't have anything to do with that.
Okay, so basically the band signed with Crash, and that record deal then was taken by the owner in when he opened up Driven then, basically.
Correct.
Yeah, okay. The record came out in September, I believe, in North America. Is the band then happy with how the label has, promoted the record or not?
Well, you know, every band that doesn't sell well will blame this and blame that. I mean, today, you know, you have satellite radio. I mean, back in the day, metal bands had to fight and fight and fight to get on the radio, and they hardly ever did. And, you know, there was payola going on and backroom deals going on, but really the main objective was to get on the radio. It wasn't necessarily to have ads and magazines. Well, there's hardly any magazines anymore, so I don't think fans buy records because of ads and magazines. I think fans buy records because they hear the song on, whether it's from their friend or on the radio. And we got on regular rotation on Sirius XM satellite radio. Is a very important, I mean, there's 20 million subscribers to that in the United States. I don't know if you know Howard Stern. He's an extremely famous personality.
Yeah, I definitely know Howard Stern. Everyone knows Howard, yeah.
Yeah, well, when he, you know, he went to Sirius Radio, but, you know, millions and millions of people followed him. And, you know, when they, you know, one of the stations on Sirius is, you know, it's called Liquid Metal. And Liquid Metal decided on their own to pick up the record and start playing it. And they played it every day, several times a day. And so, in my opinion, you know, if your record's good enough, fans will hear about it and they'll buy it. You know, I mean, I don't know what a label, you know, if a promotion, back in the day, promotion was more obvious. Okay, you had to take out ads because there was no other thing to do. But, you know, and hopefully the ad and, you know, the visuals on the ad cause people, you know, to generate an interest. But today you can download files, you can listen to clips, you can go on our website and listen to this. There's YouTube, we're on every single social media forum there is. We have MySpace, we have Facebook, we have this, that. I mean, I don't know what a label is supposed to do to make it happen. I mean, you know, we're on the radio.
Yeah.
On all this, you know, I mean, what more can they do, you know? So I don't really blame the label for success or failure. I mean, you know, the label's there to facilitate, you know, if they, like, you know, the label's what, you know, Mark Noir got us our deal with Nuclear Blast in Europe and Australia and Japan, and that was tremendous work. And the label also had North American distribution through Warner Brothers, which was tremendous. So, I mean, I you know, other people might disagree in the band or, you know, whatever, but, you know, I think that they did all they could. They gave us a fair budget to go into the studio. We got a great engineer who had a reputation. Used great gear. You know, we had Travis Smith, you know, as our artist. You know, he's a tremendous artist, and he got us great visuals for the cover. I mean, I don't know what more we can ask for. I mean, you know, if the record's going to sell, I don't think it's because of the label taking out ads in the two magazines that are left in the country. I mean, I personally haven't looked in a magazine in so long. That's not where I find out about music. I find it on the radio. So, you know, I think that, you know, as they say, the cream rises to the top. Fans are going to buy your record. They're going to buy it. If they're not, they're not. And that's all there is to it. I don't blame anybody.
Okay. Certain perceptions about the label, though, because of Brian's views nowadays, is a Christian-type label? Like, are there any concerns from the band about Driven being viewed that way? Or is it just not a fan?
You know, I mean, we don't know, because, I mean, whether or not, you know, like, I don't think any metal fans give a shit about Brian being Christian. They don't even know that Brian's part of, I mean, you'd have to be in the business to know that Brian Welch even is part of Driven. And I don't think any of our fans even know what the name of our label is. I mean, you know, all they know is Flotsam & Jetsam has another record up. They don't care if, all right, so the record's on Driven, the record's on Crash, the record's on Metal Blade. I mean, everybody knows Metal Blade, but, you know, I don't think anybody knows that Brian Welch is even associated with Driven. I mean, you'd have to really know your shit to even know that. So, I don't see any problem with it being a Christian label because, or, you know, if they have Christian aspects to them, because I don't think any of our fans know that at all. I don't think I've looked at one posting on any of our things on Facebook or whatever that has even mentioned that. So, I don't think it's been a problem.
Okay. Why did Mark end up? Why did he decide to leave the band after 13 years?
Because simply his family on his he has a half brother who you know, his family, let's say, has a company in Arizona that's they're looking to compete and be a huge telecommunications company, like along the lines of, you know, AT&T and Sprint and all that out here. And, you know, times are so unbelievably bad in the United States right now. For our history, it's as bad as the Great Depression. There's no more middle class in this country, really. You have the rich, and then you have everybody else, and they've really eliminated the middle class. I mean, you can make $70,000 here a year and still struggle your ass off. I mean, it's like, so Mark had an opportunity to have some security, and he didn't want to appear flaky, and, you know, he wouldn't have been able to convince them that he was serious if he was still going to do records and do touring, and he just decided that at this stage in his life, he already experienced all of his rock and roll dreams, and he wanted to have security. And I would have to say, I would probably have done the same thing. I mean, if a company that's trying to compete with AT&T in the future, maybe not today, but in the future, a growing company, and it's my family's company, and they want to give me an opportunity, I think I'd jump on it right now, because I personally have been out of work for 8 months, okay, so, and I have a pretty good background, and I'm very, very concerned about my future, and if somebody offered me a true security today, I'd have to take a good hard look at that. I mean, you know, I've done done, I've played in 16 countries. I've done, four studio and three live records with this band. I've kind of, I've accomplished those goals. I don't know, why I would forego future security for long term to do another record or to do another tour. It just so happens that I've been lucky and the rest of the band members have been lucky enough that we seem to get employment situations that are flexible and they allow us to go on tour. They allow us to take time for this. They allow us to take time for that. But if they put the whip down and say, listen, you have to make a choice, everybody would have to take a very hard look at that. A few years ago, you could change jobs every month. Today, you're lucky if you have a job at all. I mean, there's 25 million unemployed people in this country right now. So, and I happen to live in a state, in a city that has the worst unemployment in the whole United States, in Las Vegas. So it's over 20% unemployment here. So, we're all very, very nervous for our future as far as economic security goes. And that was never really the issue just as recently as a few years ago. So, it's just a new reality today here. And it doesn't appear to be getting any better. In fact, it appears to be getting a whole lot worse. And these things have to be weighed, appropriately, and you have to make intelligent decisions for your future,
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm 23, and I've been looking for entry-level work, really, trying to get into the job market, and there don't seem to be nothing there, really. So I'm in the same, same situation in terms of being unemployed. It's quite difficult.
Yeah, man.
So, anyway, you said about Mark, would you, if you were offered, this sort of financial security, but you had to, forego then being in the band, would you have to seriously consider, you'd have to seriously consider that offer then, really?
I sure would, and I'm telling you, I'm 44, and so is pretty much everybody else in this band, and when you're 44, look staring into the future with, just a couple of statistics. I mean, the real estate market here is worse than the Great Depression. In the Great Depression, real estate fell about, 28% from its high or whatever. Well, it's already over 30% now, all right? It's fallen over 30%, and all the experts say it's got another 20 to 50% to go. I mean, they're trying so hard on the news to paint a rosy picture about this and that might be improving. Just everything is horrifying. Pensions are, $3 trillion short. Everybody's losing their 401ks. They're fucking, it's just so unbelievably scary right now. If you're paying attention, most people in the United States just stick their head in the ground and, they pretend that it's not happening. They don't want to watch the news. They don't care. They think that, it'll be all right. It's going to get better. I pay attention, and from what I see, it's not getting better. It's getting nothing but worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, I would, I'm scared. I ain't gonna lie, I'm scared. And if it came down to being a drummer or surviving into my old age, I'd have to pick surviving. But so far, I haven't had, every job I seem to get seems to be very supportive of my double life that I go on, we only go on tour for a couple few weeks a year. So, I've been able to, everybody's been able to manage it in both ways, to be in a band and have a job. But Mark felt that he needed to go, head first into the job and just put everything else behind him. And, so that's what his decision was.
Out of curiosity, what is your profession then? Obviously you're a drummer, but what is your employment profession?
I worked at Caesar's Palace Casino out here selling way overpriced art, just high-end retail sales. But, before the economic crash, you can make good money in Las Vegas, selling anything because, millions and millions of people visit this place and buy things, and this is where they come to spend their money. But, there's a double-edged sword. When you're in Las Vegas, when the economy sucks, you get it the worst, because everybody stops coming, and when the economy is good, you get it the best because everybody's coming, and it just so happens now it's the worst. So even though there's still a lot of people coming here, they're not spending any money. You get the kind of a lower class crowd that just wants to drink beer and that sort of thing. They're not spending thousands of dollars on unnecessary shit for their house. So that's basically what I've been doing out here for 4 years, is selling high-end
say. How did Mark's departure end up in Michael returning?
Michael didn't replace Mark. Michael came back for our last tour to replace Ed. Ed left because he, you know, moved to California and became sober and wanted to concentrate on, you know, Ed was a partier his whole life. He drank, he did things that he shouldn't have done, and he decided at some point, done with all that, and he wanted to change his life, and he moved to the beach in California and started a new life, and he felt that Flotsam and Jetsam was going to be, you know, a negative aspect to that, because, you know, when you go on tour, if you do shows, you're surrounded by people drinking, smoking, this, that, and, you know, he wasn't doing any of that, and he knew that that would be the case on every show he went to, so he decided to take, to put that behind him, at least for now, but, you know, so anyway, Mike Gilbert replaced Ed and played with Mark, and then now Mark left, now Ed came back for a show. We just played Mexico City 2 days ago, and Ed did that show with us, so it was Ed and Mike together on stage for the first time in like 16 years. Now, whether or not Ed stays, which would be the ideal situation for the obvious reason, because now we have the two original guitar players, that remains to be seen. That's up to Ed, and I'm not putting any pressure on Ed to make that decision right now, because there's no need to, because there's no tour, and there's no, you know, we are going to get another record, but we won't even record that record until the fall of next year, so there's no need to, you know, put any pressure on. The more time that goes on that Ed, you know, stays sober and learns how to deal with that, the less he will fear coming back into the band full time, because he'll know how to, you know, conduct his life as a sober person and not worry about people, what other people are doing. So I have a feeling, you know, that, you know, hopefully Ed will choose to stay in the band, because there's not a whole lot of commitment there. He's a, you know, he'll record records, he'll do a few shows here and there. So I'm hoping that Ed is the permanent replacement for Mark Simpson, but I can't confirm that yet.
Obviously, the hope is that Ed is eventually back on a permanent basis, but should that not be the case, is there a need to get another guitarist then, or can Mike do solo duties?
Mike Gilbert could do another record and record all the parts in the studio, and then we could hire another guitar player to do the shows, but eventually, you know, we'll need to, you know, this is a two guitar player band, so it's either going to be Ed or somebody else.
Okay. Fair enough. Thought I'd ask. And like you mentioned, the record being like a very good record, and as you know, like Art Shock magazine in Holland, I believe, voted the album of the year for 2010. What are your thoughts on that?
I was blown away, because I mean, who was number two? Slash from Guns N' Roses. I mean, he's one of the most accomplished, you know, songwriters of all time, you know, as far as record sales are any indication, and, you know, to beat Evermore and Overkill and Death Angel and Exodus and all the rest of them, it was quite an honor. I mean, we had no idea that was going to happen. I mean, and then not only that, powermetal.de, which is a huge German site, it's not a magazine, but it's a very important website in Germany, which is a very important country for metal, as you know.
Yeah.
Gave it Album of the Month in December over Motorhead. I mean, like, we beat Motorhead in Germany? I mean, I can't even fucking believe that for a minute. So, I mean, you know, the record really has hit, you know, the right chord with some people. I think the reason being is simply we have one of the best singers in metal, period. And, you know, we don't try to write thrash songs, 10 thrash songs, because that would be wasting Eric AK's talent. You know, let's face it, the voice of the band is the signature, and AK had so much, you know, range and versatility with his voice that it would be a crime to try to write 10 thrash songs, you know, because it just wouldn't, we could do that, but it just doesn't make sense when you have a singer like AK. I mean, I think, like, the best vocal on the record, maybe ever in his career, is the most, you know, is the ballad, Better Off, well, it's not a ballad, it's very, you know, it's depressing lyrics, but Better Off Dead is this, obviously, the slow song on the record, and it's the best one he sings. I mean, you know, AK is just, he's got so much, you know, versatility that I think that's what's making this record stand out, is that, you know, we have, like, 5 mid-tempo songs and 5 faster songs, so when you get to the fast song, it stands out, because, you know, because if you're doing 10 fast songs, nothing stands out. So, you know, I think that it was just released at the right time, because I don't hear a lot of bands, you know, that are willing to, you know, try to experiment a little bit with their sound through a record. I mean, if you listen to the new Exodus, you listen to the new, Overkill, you listen, I mean, it's all the same. I mean, I love those, but I love Exodus. I couldn't love a thrash band more, you know, but, you know, they're so pressured to be thrash, American thrash, you know, heroes that, you know, it just, there's nowhere to go from there. You know, I mean, when you start on 10, where do you go? There's no 11. It's just,
yeah.
You know, and so, you know, Flotsam tries to take you on a little journey where you have, Hypocrites, nice mid-tempo, and then you have Cake, which is mid-tempo, and then you have something like, you know, Black Cloud, which is obviously much faster and thrashier, and then it brings it down better off bed, and then you go back up to Black and Nice Staring, and then it ends with Secret Life, and I mean, you know, it takes you on a little journey, and I just don't hear a lot of records doing that these days.
So what were the sort of influences around the record besides the obvious being thrash, of course?
You know, Mark, this whole record was written by Mark Simpson. I mean, that's kind of a Mark Simpson issue. We didn't sit there and have strategy meetings and said, okay, let's write half the record this way and half the record that way, and let's order the songs up this way. And we don't really have a lot of strategy sessions, for better or worse. You know, we don't plan on what we're going to wear. We don't take a lot of interest in the lyrics necessarily, you know. To us, what's important is melody. I mean, you know, I still can't tell you the words to Stairway to Heaven, except she's buying a stairway to heaven. I know that lyric. And when she gets there, she knows if the stars are all climbing. But I probably don't know half the lyrics to the damn song that I've been listening to since I was 10. I mean, you know, I don't really listen to lyrics personally. I listen to melody and phrasing and the flow and how it all gels. But some people are very lyric conscious. I don't happen to be. So, you know, I think that what we know our strengths are is Eric AK's ability to find harmony and melody and counter melody against whatever musical part is thrown at him. He just has an extraordinary knack for that. And so if there is anything that we set out to do as far as, like, you know, strategy, if you can call it that, is to write songs that are going to give Eric space to stretch his voice out, to, so that, you know, for the listener, for melody. And so that's our strong suit, if anything, is Eric's voice. So, you know, like I say, you know, when we write, we try to think about what Eric's going to bring to any given part. So, so that's kind of that, you know. But, you know, people wonder if we sit there and, you know, really give a, you know, a lot of concern to, you know, aspects of image and imagery and all that sort of thing, and we don't. You know, it's just simply taking advantage of what our strongest part is, and that is that, you know, we have one of the better singers to ever exist in the metal world, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, he's on fire, man. And we just played in Mexico 2 days ago, and it was one of the best I ever heard him sing. I mean, he never stops amazing me. He seems to get better. I mean, it's strange, because he smokes cigarettes, and, you know, he doesn't necessarily take care of his voice, and he lives in the hottest desert environment in the whole United States, and, you know, he worked his ass off with his daytime job, but yet he'll still come out there and sing better and better and better and better. I have a hard time understanding how he does it, but, I mean, he's very gifted, let's put it that way.
Just now, I think you raised, when you was talking about bands like Exodus and Overkill, like the original thrash bands like Flotsam and Jetsam, I think you raised a very important issue in that these bands are pressured into doing thrash, which I feel was the same with Metallica's last record. Why do you feel then that Flotsam and Jetsam has been immune to such, you know, obviously the band's been pressured, but why do you feel the band is just gone on its own course as opposed to bowing down?
That happened before even Mark and I joined the band. I mean, Quattro was not a thrash record at all, and probably their most, you know, mellow record was Drift, and that's the one that the band would say they liked the most. You know, it was a natural evolution, man. We can't keep writing Doomsday. I mean, when we do live shows, you know, over half of our set is songs from Doomsday and No Place, because we know that's what, you know, fans are coming for, and we know they want to hear those songs, so fine, we give them what they want. But, you know, so because we play all those thrash songs live, we still feel that we're very much a thrash band. So, you know, we take care of that need to be a thrash band in our performances, so that gives us the flexibility when we write a record to not have to be that thrash band all the time. So, you know, when we play shows, it's not like we're playing mid-tempo songs. I mean, we're pretty much a full-on thrash band live. So, you know, we give the audience what they want when they see us live, but when we do a record, we feel that we need to, you know, continue to grow. And so we don't, you know, we're not trying to be counterculture or counter-thrash or anything like that. But the band has always had a history since the early 90s of experimenting with their sound, starting with Quattro.
Okay, what are the band's current plans?
Well, you know, the record doesn't even come out in Europe and Japan and Australia till February. So, you know, it's kind of like it's not even out yet, really. I mean, it's out in the States, but there's no point in booking a tour until we see the results of what happens in Europe and whatnot, because if we have to wait, from an economic standpoint, it would make no sense for us to book a tour right now, because our guarantees that we would get are not going to be as good as they would be if we just wait another month and see, you know, how the record's doing. If the record's doing well, then the agents are going to be able to make it, give us better incentive to go out on whatever tour they might propose, because we'll get better offers. So we're kind of waiting to see how the record does before we worry about a tour for that exact reason, because we want to maximize the potential of our business aspect of it, you know, for the obvious reasons. And, you know, I'm sure anybody can understand that. It just wouldn't make any sense to book a tour right now. So we're going to tour, obviously, and it's just probably happen in the fall, something like that, because nobody likes to tour in the summer, and usually the summer, you know, tours suck. And, you know, the festivals are great. Touring in the summer sucks. And hopefully Nuclear Blast, though, they might get us on some of the festivals, and that would be great, because, you know, I feel that's the one aspect that this band has been sort of backing in for many years, is